channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCorps.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on February 12th, 2022, and is current through the Star Trek Discovery episode All In, so beware of spoilers. And if you are in one of the regions where Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek Prodigy has not yet aired, and you are trying to stay spoiler-free, be sure to check the episode article on TrekCorps for time codes for each of our stories tonight in order to avoid them. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a regular news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 5 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is returning guest and co-host of the First Flight podcast right here on the Tricorder Transmissions. It's Abby Summer. Abby, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Thanks, Alex. It's always a joy to chat with you about Star Trek.
All right, Abby. Well, you know the drill. I want to know something that's got you excited about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
All right. So anyone who has heard me talk anytime in the last 6 months knows that we are a prodigy house around here.
Oh, and yes. I've got
two littles who are obsessed, and we have been listening to the soundtrack from Prodigy, and they are into it. In fact, every time they hear the music, they get, you know, their chests puff up and they go striding around and playing. And that's been really fun. But it's also sent me back into listening to more of the older soundtracks from Star Trek, like going back to some of the movies and some of the old series from the 90s. And it has been really, really fun for me to just kind of listen to some of that music that I haven't really focused on in a while. I mean, they're always in my rotation, but not as much as they have been the past couple weeks. And it has just been joyous to realize that it's one of those little things that a lot of people don't think about, but Star Trek has phenomenal music. It always has. It does now. And I have absolutely reveled in having that in my earbuds for the past couple weeks. And it's just made a hard time in my household a little bit easier.
That's so funny, because the thing that I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is the Star Trek Prodigy soundtrack, which for the first half of the first season is now complete. So yeah, let's talk about it. First of all, Star Trek music, incredible. I have a playlist of all of the kind of officially released Star Trek music that they have done. It runs to about, I think it's like 24 hours worth of Star Trek music if you just play the whole playlist from beginning to end, and it just keeps getting bigger. You know, I've got the old complete original series soundtrack when they did that for the 50th anniversary. I've got all the like box sets that they did for Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, all the new shows, all the movies, the complete soundtracks and everything. So yeah, I mean, it's my go-to for like if I'm working.
Yes.
And I just, you know, and sometimes, you know, particularly for like Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, TNG, you know, the music there oftentimes is sort of tagged as quote unquote sonic wallpaper and not being terribly interesting, which I first of all disagree with because I really like it. But second of all, that's actually really good for like, you know, working, because you've got something that's drowning out all of the distractions around you, but is also a comforting soundscape that you understand and know very well.
Exactly. And I have on my playlist, I don't have one that's everything, but I have them like energizing Trek music and emotional Trek music and low-key Trek music. And so it's a mix, and it's kind of fun. And it does make me realize how deep of a nerd I am when I can pick out which series from like 3 or 4 notes. But you know what? That's okay, because I am proud of my deep nerddom. And I actually was thinking of you earlier this week because I was listening to the Generation soundtrack kind of from beginning to end. And I know we both have a soft spot for that.
Oh, yes.
And I have to say, the music on that film is so haunting at times. I found myself walking in rhythm to some of it later in the day, just in my head. And that was one of the very first CDs that I actually physically owned as a kid. And I just remember adoring that CD, poring over the liner notes and the sound effects at the end where they're, you know, the shuttle crash and the tricorders and the doorbells. And those are, when you have it on shuffle, a little bit jarring. But what a fun soundtrack, and what a nice little bit of nostalgia I knew you'd appreciate.
Oh yeah, can't get me enough of the Generations Overture.
Yes.
But I mean, pivoting back to the Star Trek Prodigy soundtrack for just a second. So they, for all of the current shows, they've released a soundtrack for it. You know, Discovery Seasons 1, 2, and 3, Picard Season 1, Lower Decks has a combo soundtrack for Seasons 1 and 2. But Prodigy is really the first time that they have released, like, I don't know if it's all of the music from all of the episodes so far, but it's got to be pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean, Nami Melumad has basically been, you know, sort of every couple of episodes will release sort of an update to the soundtrack, which adds a bunch of tracks from those most recent ones. And this past Friday, she just released the last three episodes. So now you've got everything from the pilot all the way through A Moral Star Part 2, the last track being Admiral Janeway's theme, which is, we'll talk more about that in a second. But I mean, it is, I'm looking at the soundtrack now, it's 93 tracks.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's a lot of music. And if you, you know, obviously you can stream it on Spotify or Amazon Music or wherever it is you stream it. But if you, like me, I like to buy them.
Me too.
And, you know, like I sort them in my iTunes and, you know, do all kinds of weird stuff to them because I have a distinctly poisoned brain. But, you know, it's a $10 soundtrack and it has 93 tracks on it, which is a massive value for money if you want to purchase the digital copy for it. I mean, that's a lot of music for not a lot of money. And it's all really good. I was listening to the update this morning, you know, with all of the stuff from the season finale two-parter, excuse me, mid-season finale two-parter. And it's just all just really, really good. And I'm thrilled that they are doing it and the music is available and that we've got lots to listen to because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I appreciate the fact that we have new composers coming in doing just as high of quality of music as there always has been. And it's got those same through lines. Like when you listen to the older stuff all the way back, all the way up to the things that released, you know, a week ago, you can still tell it's Star Trek, but it's got kind of a little bit more modern as we talk about sci-fi, but it's got that little bit of newness to it, I guess. And it's neat because it all goes together, but it's all distinct. And that is hard to do when you have a copious amount of music. None of it feels like retreading, which is really amazing.
Yeah, because I have an important correction to make on my previous comment about my Star Trek playlist, because I just pulled it up because I was curious. So this is everything that's been released so far, no duplicates. So like if like The Wrath of Khan has gotten three different soundtrack releases, I've only got the most recent on here. So it's not like it's The Wrath of Khan three times and then, you know, Generations twice. And basically all the movies have gotten about two releases. So this is just, this is all like distinct pieces of music. It also includes the soundtrack for the Ultimate 50th Anniversary Concert Tour. You know, the like, they had the traveling orchestra that was going around the US doing the concert for the 50th anniversary. It's also got the soundtrack for the Deep Space Nine documentary. It is not 24 hours, Abby.
Is it 24 days?
Not quite, but how long do you think it is?
A week?
It is 5 days long.
Oh my God.
It is 3,034 songs.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not 24 hours. It's 5 days. There's
That's
a lot.
Beautiful.
Yeah. There's a lot.
That's a
there's
whole
a
work week.
Yeah, plus. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just start the work week and play it through and then restart it the next week and keep going.
Sounds like a plan on my end.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on and I'm a reporter.
Well, the hype machine for Star Trek Strange New Worlds is starting to kick up into higher gear with a few new details about the show being shared at the Television Critics Association a week and a half ago. First up, we got a look at the key art for Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1. That's the sort of, you know, poster for the season. The striking poster shows Captain Pike on horseback with the Enterprise in the sky above an alien planet. We also got a few new details on the show out of the panel at the TCA. The family connection between La'an Noonien Singh and Khan Noonien Singh was confirmed. It was obviously, you know, he didn't have to be a rocket scientist to put two and two together there, but still, the family connection has been confirmed. And Celia Rose Gooding, who plays Uhura, talked about how excited she was to bring a more unsure and less confident side to the junior Enterprise officer. Obviously, she's playing the character quite a bit before the Nichelle Nichols version of the character who showed up in the original series, and she's still a cadet at this point in the timeline. They also showed at the TCA, it was not released online, but they did show a clip from presumably the pilot in which Uhura boards the Enterprise for the first time. Lots of people seem very excited about it. You can find a more detailed description of that clip. I think it's Den of Geek did a kind of write-up of it. But yeah, it was only shown for people in the room, so it's not been shown online. And finally, we now know, thanks to numerous cast and crew announcements, that filming on season 2, which was the show was announced as being renewed a few weeks ago, but that filming on season 2 is now underway back up in Canada. So not only has it been renewed, they're already starting filming. Season 1 premieres on May 5th in the United States. International distribution plans have yet to be announced. I wouldn't be shocked if it ends up on Paramount Plus exclusively. Abby, are you looking forward to Star Trek Strange New Worlds?
Can I say yes a million times? Because yes, so many times over. I really, really, really can't wait for May. This is going to be such a great moment in Star Trek to kind of bring everything full circle. I love Pike as a character. I've liked all the iterations of Pike that we've seen, but I really have enjoyed Anson Mount's Pike a lot. And I cannot wait to see the other Enterprise crew that we've seen before on Discovery and who they're bringing in new. Everything I see about this makes me more excited. And while I'm happily frustrated, I guess is how I'd put it, that we don't have more information yet, it is very tantalizing. It's like, you know, playing with a cat with the feather on a string.
Yeah,
just
sure.
Like, are you going to jump for this? Are you excited for this? You're still excited, aren't you? Because I am. I mean, this is just beautiful. And I like that you can tell just from the key art with the horse and the desert and the ship, the planet with all that, the people who are doing this know, appreciate, and honor the history that it's coming from. So I can't wait to see how they do that and still push the boundaries. And you know what? The cast, everything that I see from this cast, the ones that we've seen previously, the new cast, they seem like they are the type of Star Trek cast family that we see on all of our other shows already, where they are close with each other, they're excited, they have fun on and off set, and they're just as excited to be there as we are to watch them. So bring it on. I want it all. Now, please.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're really just sort of waiting for that trailer, right?
Yes.
You know, which I guess, and I was, while you were talking, I was just trying to find it, and I couldn't come up with the date for it. I think they said something about a Paramount Plus investor event, you know.
Next week, isn't it?
I think it is next week. Yeah. At some point, maybe it's like the 18th or something like that. I don't know. I'm pulling that out of my butt. But I mean, maybe we'll get it then. Maybe, you know, a couple of people have speculated maybe we'll get it at the Super Bowl on Sunday. Well, by the time you hear this, you will know whether it was at the Super Bowl or not, because we're filming on Saturday. The Super Bowl's tomorrow. This episode comes out on Monday. I'm going to guess, since the Super Bowl's on NBC this year and not CBS, that they probably won't take up a Super Bowl slot. But hey, who knows? It's a, you know, big release. They obviously want to get people hyped for it. Oh, and also, you know, maybe you do that for Star Trek Picard, since that's coming up in just a couple of weeks. But anyway, that first trailer's got to be right around the corner. And yeah, this is really interesting. I'm itching to see the first look at the show, partially because, you know, I'm interested to see how different it feels from the sort of glimpses of the Enterprise and the Enterprise characters that we got in Star Trek Discovery season 2, right? Like, is it going to feel, and you know, one of these is not inherently better than the other, but I'm curious the extent to which it will feel like it is an extension from the last moments of Star Trek Discovery season 2, you know, where you're just on the Enterprise and Spock, you know, sees the seventh signal and then they sort of warp off to, you know, whatever kind of adventures await. Is it going to feel like it picks up the very next moment after that? Or is it going to feel like its own thing? Well, we know the uniforms are a bit different, so, you know, that's obviously going to have an impact on it. But yeah, it's really interesting because we were in the 23rd century, right? That was our window into modern Star Trek, was Star Trek Discovery season 1 and 2. And it was all about the 23rd century. And we didn't know we were going to be doing the 24th century. And we didn't know we were going to be doing the 32nd century. And like, we were just sort of focused on that one period of time. And now we've kind of gone all over the place, right? We've gone to the far future. We've gone to the 24th century. We're sort of jumping a bit around the 24th century. Partially we're in 2399, 2400. Partially we're in 2383. And partially we're in 2384, right? So like, it's just, you know, we sort of jumped around the timeline a bit. So it'd be really interesting now to, again, go back to the 23rd century. And is it going to feel like the 23rd century that we saw in 2019, or is it going to feel like its own version of the 23rd century? Again, not saying that one is better than the other, but it will be really interesting to see how that plays out, because obviously in our minds right now, Pike, Spock, and number one are exactly the same as the way that we last saw them in Disco season two. And that might not be exactly how they are in Strange New Worlds. And I, you know, I can't wait to meet the new versions of them.
Yeah. And to see that bridge from where we saw them to where we know eventually some of them are going to get to when we get to TOS. So what an interesting place in history to get to play around with.
Yeah. I mean, the Noonien Singh stuff is like, okay.
I hope it's done well. I really hope it's done well. And it's not just out there to for name recognition only. Let's really make this have a reason to be there.
Yeah, it's just like, and I kind of talked about this on Twitter, and I don't know that I've kind of fully sort of explained my kind of reasoning behind it. But it's just, it is frustrating that they would make decisions to do some of this stuff where it's just like, where the immediate reaction is like, sharp intake of breath, slow exhalation. Well, I hope they do it well. Yeah. Right? Like, you know, like, yeah. Like we've had a lot of that over the last, you know, 5 years. Burnham being Spock's sister. Yes, that was done, you know, very well, in my opinion. But still, it was one of those like, oh, you know, it might not be done well, right? Pike Spock at number one. Oh, it might not be done well, right? Like, yeah. You know, there's been a lot of these moments where in these shows, the live action shows, there have been these decisions to kind of throw a lasso around some element of Star Trek canon, which seems very unexpected, and sort of dare the audience to go, I hate this before I've seen it.
Yeah.
And it's just very tiring, right? Like, there have to be many original character and story ideas that they could ultimately kind of explore and play with. And to come right out of the gate with a Khan connection, it's just like, okay, sure, I hope it is done well, right? And I have confidence in them that they will do it well. But it's just this element of like, oh, now I got to go around the internet saying, oh, give them time, you know, let it play out. Like, see what happens before you judge it. It's just like, I don't know. We've gone through this playbook 100 times and it's boring.
Yeah, it seems like they've taken a lot of really big swings. And so far, they've connected. And some of them have been home runs. But you know that every once in a while, there's going to be something that misses because that's how it goes. And you just don't ever want it to be the next thing.
Right.
And people can be, well, especially talking Twitter, people can be so knee-jerk reaction that it would be nice to just have everybody be excited without any of that behind it. But, you know, right. that's not Twitter and that's not the world. And I'm just going to keep saying, you know what? It looks beautiful. I'm excited. And there's a lot of characters in there that we don't know much about or anything about. I'm pumped for them as well.
And give us a trailer.
Yes, please. I would like to dissect frames because that's how I roll around here.
All right, let's talk Star Trek Prodigy. So looking back on Star Trek shows that have just wrapped for now, Star Trek Prodigy's mid-season finale, A Moral Star Part 2, represented a significant evolution for the newest Star Trek show as it enters the back half of Season 1 later this year. After 10 episodes of Hologram Janeway, the show introduced us in its final moments to Vice Admiral Catherine Janeway, commanding the USS Dauntless, which is currently in search of the Protostar. There are lots of really cool details in this final scene of the episode, including some new uniforms, the previously used alternate future com badge from episodes like All Good Things, Timeless, and Endgame, and a mashup of the Dauntless encountered by Starfleet in Hope and Fear, and the original Rick Sternbach concept design for Voyager before the show premiered. Speaking with Aaron Watke, one of the head writers for Prodigy, he explained the following about the choice of com badge. He explained that the choice of com badge was connected to the events of Endgame, when Voyager brought back to the Alpha Quadrant a lot of future technology that they should not have had access to, which kicks off a tech renaissance for the Federation, who are in a rush to exploit many of the concepts and designs, and also that includes adopting the Endgame style com badge, which creates the natural evolution towards the Picard style com badge seen later in the century and in Star Trek Picard. Walke also talked about the uniforms and how other Star Trek shows, including Lower Decks, have definitively established that multiple uniform styles are in use at the same time in Starfleet, and that these are often attached to specific divisions of Starfleet or types of mission. And on the decision to use the Dauntless as a model for the Federation's first slipstream ship, Walke talked about how it made sense from Starfleet's perspective to adopt a design they know functions well for slipstream when Voyager's attempts to retrofit the system onto their own ship were unsuccessful. I really recommend checking out one of the several interviews that Walke did connected to the mid-season finale of Prodigy. We did one over at TrekCore. Trek Movie did another one that was also really good. For many more details about how thoughtful the Prodigy production team has been about this show's place within the Star Trek canon, Abby, just tell me, Admiral Janeway, what was your reaction?
I might have shrieked out loud. It was so perfect. And I love how they're bringing all these little pieces around. And I love how much you can tell they're thinking about all this in a show that's aimed for kids and new Star Trek fans. And that is so much a love letter to all of us who they know are out here freeze framing trailers and shows and all of that. Wow, what an amazing job there. And I cannot wait for Admiral Janeway to be part of this, because I watched this with my two littles, and anything that Hologram Janeway says is pretty much like the law in our house. Hologram Janeway rules supreme. And then they saw real Janeway and they were like, oh, that's another Janeway. Can Janeway talk to Janeway? And I was like, well, it's happened before. So yes, Janeway can talk to Janeway. And I am so excited to see where this goes. I am excited for the background crew that we, you know, only saw a little bit on the Dauntless. And Prodigy has done nothing but exceed my expectations. And when you listen to Aaron talk about it, it is just joyful. He's excited to be doing it. He's excited to be putting it out in the world. And the reception has been so good for this show. I think what a wonderful mid-season finale. Though I have to say, my daughters were both upset that they have to wait now. They're children of the streaming age. So they were both just like, wait, that's real Janeway. When's the next one? And I'm like, a while.
Yeah.
They're taking a break. And I saw mirrored in their faces exactly what it was like for me in the summers of my youth, waiting for cliffhangers to come to the end point. So I think this was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, you put it very, very well there. Like the joyful way in which, you know, Aaron and Mike McMahon does this too, yeah. You know, sort of dive yeah. into this minutiae of Star Trek, which other than them, we're the only ones who care about, right? But still, having that and like diving deep on, you know, there's an explanation for why the All Good Things Combad shows up in this episode, which is just, I don't know, we like the design and, you know, it not shown up in a while and seemed like it'd be cool and people get a kick out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Or the Dauntless, where it's like, well, you know, you saw that shit before, so we might as well show it to you again type thing. But the level of thought and attention and world building that went into kind of understanding the reason why that comm badge, why that ship versus a different comm badge or a different ship or a different uniform, it's just, it's really, really, you know, terrific and very, very cool. And, you know, it, like, that's the kind of stuff that I really like. Does it have an impact on the story and the show? Not really. Does it, for me, help significantly enhance my enjoyment of the show? Absolutely it does, because, you know, it's just something that I'm really into. Again, a deeply poisoned brain that I'm never going to be able to recover from. And to have had that come at the end of what was, you know, a really terrific two-parter, which, you know, obviously we as the kind of, you know, let's call ourselves legacy fans have, you know, sort of fixated on the Chakotays and the Admiral Janeways and, you know, the last 10 seconds of the episode. That two-part episode was terrific and really kind of moved the story forward for the show. Gave some great character work for each of those main characters of the Prodigy mm-hmm. crew, and was a great, you know, without that last 10 seconds, it's still a terrific two-parter of Star Trek. With those extra 10 seconds, legacy fans like us, you know, hit the roof and have a great time.
Well, and I think that what's so nice about it is it's such a blend, and all those details make it feel real. Like, people are taking the time to care about this show in a way as if it is going to actually impact real life and real communications, which badge they're wearing or which uniform. And that's makes you be able to get absorbed into that universe, which is so interesting. And, you know, the cool part about you talking about us legacy fans here is watching with new fans too. Sometimes I see them looking at me to see if I'm reacting to something, because they already understand that there's more to the story than what they're seeing there. And that is a powerful tool as well, that you're introducing all this and saying, hey, you want want to know more about this? Let's do it. You want to know more about this? Let's do it. And they seem to have really carefully, deliberately plotted out this story now. And when you hear the little hints they give about the next 10, 20, 30 episodes to come, they have a plan for pulling all of those little things in and giving them to the new audience. And it's so well done. And it's so connected that only people that really care as deeply as us legacy fans with poison brains do would do it as well as they have.
Well, Deadline reports that the often hinted, sometimes rumored Starfleet Academy show is now in formal development at Paramount Plus, with Absentia co-creator Gaia Violo expected to make a pitch for the show. No details on when the Starfleet Academy show might be set. Fans have speculated that the departure of Mary Wiseman from main cast status in Star Trek Discovery Season 4 is potentially connected to the new show, but that is just 100% a rumor at this stage. Realistically, there are probably three timeframes that the Starfleet Academy show could be set in just as easily. One, the 23rd century alongside Star Trek Strange New Worlds. You've got a Cadet Uhura in Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Two, connected to the Star Trek Picard time frame, some, you know, late 24th century show, gives you a good opportunity to bring in a bunch of legacy characters. And then in the future Star Trek Discovery time frame of the 32nd century, when they are rebuilding Starfleet Academy and rebuilding the Federation, I think you could easily set a show in any of those three time periods and have it be really good. I don't think it necessarily has to be attached to the Discovery time frame. In addition to rumblings about Starfleet Academy, Viacom CBS have also kept the flame alight for hopes of a Section 31 series. For those of you who are holding a flame for that show, quote, "Yes, we are still in development on Section 31, so there will be more news on that soon," Nicole Clemens, president of original scripted series at Paramount Plus, told reporters again at TCA, where the Star Trek Strange New Worlds news came from. She also hinted that in addition to the five shows already in production, we may expect some, quote, "curated additions soon," potentially hinting at both Starfleet Academy and Section 31, or the potential for another show that Alex Kurtzman has hinted at occasionally over the last couple of years, again at TCA. And it's not entirely clear he was talking about a potential eighth series, right? Five we got right now, Starfleet Academy number six, Section 31 number seven, and a potential eighth, in that he, you know, was talking about Starfleet Academy, and then he was like, well, there's one more, and he's like, I'm staying tight-lipped on it, and it kind of implied that that was not Section 31, and maybe it was this potential eighth, which, you know, who knows, could be the potential successor show to Star Trek Picard, you know, which is wrapping up filming its third season right now, and there's all these questions about what its future is. So anyway, plenty of sort of plenty of Star Trek still to come. Abby, Starfleet Academy, those three potential timeframes in which the show could be set, which do you think you would prefer?
That's a hard question, because I think the answer to that is yes. I would like to see a show in every single one of those. I am a teacher in my real life, so I have always been fascinated with the idea of the academy and the teaching side of it. And as much as I deeply miss Tilly on Discovery, which I do, her becoming a teacher and inspiring the future just filled my heart to the brim. So I would love to see that. I would love to see any of those. But I also wonder, you know, this is far out. We're thinking years out. There is nothing to say that this couldn't be another animated show, and that this couldn't be, if they have an idea that of where Prodigy is going to end, them getting back to the Federation, and maybe it's our Prodigy crew going to the Academy. I mean, eventually they're going to have to grow up. So that could be interesting too. And, you know, there's always been this kicking around for so long. And I think whatever they do, I'm probably going to like it, just because it's going to reflect a little bit of where, if I was in Starfleet, where I'd probably end up. And so I think all these have great potential. And I'm just so excited that we're talking about, you know, possibly eight Star Trek shows coming, because I lived through the fallow period. And this is just wonderful. Golden age for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm on record as being in favor of the Starfleet Academy show being set in the late 24th century, because I think there's lots of cool stuff you could do with legacy characters making appearances. And just that's my favorite part of the Star Trek timeline. And, you know, if I had my druthers, you know, would just spend all of my time focused on. But I would be perfectly content and happy with it to be set, you know, either in the far future as a spin-off of Discovery, as a spin-off for Star Trek Strange New Worlds, sort of in the kind of 23rd century time frame. That's all good with me. I think, you know, I'm just looking forward to a good show. You know, interesting, they're continuing to kind of trail the can down the path for Section 31, you know, not dead, new soon. Okay, you know, my like third show I ever did 3 years ago for Weekly Trek was the announcement of, you know, that Section 31 was going into development. So here we are 3 years later and still no real movement in any kind of direction on it. But, you know, these things take time and all of the, you know, complicating factors that there have been. And then, yeah, this potential tantalizing, you know, eighth series, you know, could it be a Star Trek Picard successor series? You know, so Picard maybe ends at three seasons, like lots of people have been expecting, not announced in the SFX article, but, you know, has kind of seems like that's the direction they're going in. Unlikely Sir Patrick Stewart, you know, at the age of 81, if they were to film a fourth season, probably wouldn't do it until next year. He would be 82 at that point. Should necessarily be, you know, continuing to be a series regular on a television show. But, you know, in that interview that was in SFX, Terry Metalis and Akiva Goldsman did sort of talk about how they, you know, been having conversations about kind of what would sort of spin out of Star Trek Picard season 3, whether that was a season 4 or whether that was, you know, something to kind of pick up the baton and run with it, even if that's not with Sir Patrick Stewart. And, you know, maybe that's what the 8th series is, you know, so sort of it sort of is an 8th series, but one of the series goes away. So, you know, it kind of takes its place. But anyway, I mean, you know, lots for us to speculate on, lots to look forward to. But yeah, it's I guess it just keeps coming back to a familiar refrain on this show. It's a good time to be a Star Trek fan.
Sure is.
Well, and lastly this week, Eagle Moss have announced the next in their line of ships from their Star Trek Lower Decks collection. Following the USS Cerritos and the USS Titan will be the USS Vancouver, which appeared in the season 1 episode Cupid's Errant Arrow. The 8-inch ship will beam down to collectors in April and will cost about $60. Abby, what's been your favorite ship design from Star Trek Lower Decks to date?
Oh, that's hard. But I think I do have to go with the Cerritos. Like, it sounds so cliche, but that, what a fun ship. And I love that the main ship on Lower Decks is not a flagship or a prototype or a big thing. It's just a regular ship. And I like that because most of Starfleet is not on the flagship. So I enjoy the Cerritos a lot. And I'm so excited that they are bringing more Lower Decks merchandise out because there hasn't been a lot of it. And Lower Decks has been around for a while. And I know pandemic and everything is all wackadoo with supply chains and all that, but it seems like this is a perfect way to sell a lot of merchandise. So bring on the ships, bring on the action figures, bring on it. Everything for me.
Yeah, it's a cool ship design too. I really like the Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know, just the look of it. It's, you know, just sort of your classic late 24th century Starfleet design, but a new one, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. I always like to see new ones. And so, yeah, this one's definitely going into the collection. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that.
I hope it sells well so that they will do more ships from the shows that are on right now. I think that would be a good way to show some fandom love.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts. And now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, my guest and I give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Abby, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
So I'm going to jump us back into Prodigy, and I am going to wish slash theorize kind of together that we know that Gwyn has that kind of glowy blue telepathy going on there.
Yes.
And I am very much hoping that that comes into play the later part of the season, and we see her being able to do more with it than just talk to the Divine or Blackout Zero. I would like to see her using it to, you know, figure out other information or maybe get a little bit more insight into Murph or to go back to the Diviner and pull some of the knowledge and memories that he has out of him, even though he's addled. I mean, we've seen that mind melds can go back and look for details like that. So I'm hoping that her telepathy has some more branches on it that we can explore coming up in the second half of the season.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. Like, you know, even in the first 10 episodes, we have seen for a lot of the characters, they've sort of gone on a bit of an arc that has leveled up their abilities in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dal, you know, has gone from being very rough and ready around the edges to, you know, being more of a captain type figure. Rock, you know, thanks to her no one's quite sure how long she was alone in Time of Mark, you know, has gone from, you know, being perceived by her kind of crewmates as being the muscle because of her size to now in that last episode, Jankum telling her to fix the warp-core because she was the one who understood how to do it aboard the Rev 12.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I think, you know, there's, you know, it seems to me like they have seeded each of these characters with certain abilities. And the plan is probably over time to kind of, you know, expand on that. And as you say, you know, Gwyn's telepathy is an area that maybe, you know, has not been quite so well kind of explored at this point. And maybe that's something to look forward to in the back half of season one. Absolutely. Yeah, so, okay, so my theory this week, this is actually a theory, this is another listener theory, this one comes from, it's funny, it's Caleb Dorsch, who you shared the episode with last time you were on, which was for our Star Trek Day wrap-up. Yeah, so Caleb has a new theory about the identity of Species 10C, which comes out of this most recent episode, and I get the sense this might be one of the last weeks we can do a Who is Species 10C theory, because I think we're probably going to find out next week or the week after. And Caleb's theory actually goes back to the Star Trek books for his theory about who Species 10C are, and to an original race from the books called the Kalia, from the Star Trek Destiny series of novels. The Kalia in the books are this kind of hyper-evolved species who are in the process of trying to, like, understand the universe, and they have an unfortunate encounter with the Columbia NX-02 and Captain Hernandez. And a bunch of stuff happens, and basically an unfortunate merging between a member of the Kalia and a human is the origin of the Borg. So, yeah, I guess I probably should have put a spoiler warning for Destiny up top, but
that's what show notes are for.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, and they are this, like, there are certain similarities between what Species 10C has been described to us as and the Kalia from the books around, you know, they have this very complex mechanism that allows them to remain hidden from the rest of the galaxy, that, like, cloaks their whole kind of star system. You know, that very much echoes from the end of the last episode. They were talking about Boromite at the end of the last episode. Mm-hmm. And Boromite's used to make Omega particles. Omega was, like, you know, the Kalia had figured out how to, like, harness the power of Omega. So there's lots of potential connections there. I don't know the extent to which the Star Trek Discovery writers' room have been reading Star Trek books, but I mean, Kirsten Byers still there in the writers' room, and she's written a lot of Star Trek books. So, and we've started to see a lot of concepts kind of come from the books, and Star Trek Discovery has also taken some of those concepts, right? The concept of control in Star Trek Discovery season 2 also came from a Star Trek novel. They executed it quite differently, but still the original idea was a novel idea. So, hey, maybe, you know, maybe we'll find out next week for the week after that they're pulling something from the books into the canon, which would be really cool.
That would be really cool. And that's a really neat theory, because the expanded universe is just that, the expanded universe. But I like how there have been so many pieces of that brought into what is canon on screen for us now. So that would just be another good way to pull all that in. And Star Trek authors never get enough credit for being as imaginative and creative as they are. Those books, I mean, some of them, if you tried to make them into films, you'd need, you know, what, 60, 70, 80 million dollars, because they've got so many out there ideas and theories and plot points. So yeah, bring those in, the ones that you can. And, you know, now that we've got animation too, they can bring more of those that might cost a lot to do with live action and put them in the animation. So yes, I'm all for it. And Caleb, awesome theory. Two thumbs up from me.
Yeah. And, like, you know, we were just talking about the Prodigy mid-season finale and the Dauntless, right? The whole concept behind using that sort of Dauntless design as a Starfleet ship, even though that was an alien design that was made to kind of look like a Starfleet ship. Lots of people have been like, well, why do they do that? Well, it's sort of not, it's not explained in the episode, but it's talked about in the books, and kind of Aaron Waltke sort of confirmed that this was the case, which is that the books established that in, like, the reason that Voyager couldn't make slipstream technology work on the Voyager is because you have to build a specially shaped ship in order for it to be able to travel at slipstream velocity safely. And the Dauntless is a design that Starfleet has encountered. And if that principle holds true, then you would just recreate that design, because you know that that's a safe design line that you can use in order to travel at slipstream velocity. And if you want to do it quickly, you know, rather than design your own shape, just use a shape you know already works, which is the Dauntless. So
Right. That's
another, you know, just a cool little thing that was sort of adapted out of the novels and now seems to be part of the canon. And that's just really, really cool.
And again, look at this. It's people who love the show making the show so they can do things like this. And it Right. Just makes my heart sick.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Abby Summer, for joining me today. Abby, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
The best place to get me is on Twitter, and I'm Abby M. Summer. That's S-O-M-M-E-R. And if you liked listening to me babble about Star Trek with Alex, you can come listen to my Enterprise Rewatch podcast. My co-host Melanie and I are going through every episode and dissecting it and loving it and chatting about it. And that is the First Flight podcast on the Tricorder Transmissions Network. And you can find us on all the socials at First Flight Pod.
Well worth the listen. And you can find the show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Abby. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.